coming up, Fuzzball?
From Down Under.
Do or do not. There is no try.
G'day, mate. How you going? G'day, mate. How you going? This is Adam O'Brien, the Fanther from Down Under, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina Studios on the Gold Coast of Australia for FanthaTracks.com. And we have some Star Wars to talk about tonight. Lots of Star Wars and a documentary about Star Wars as well, which was released on Wednesday here in Australia. And that is, of course, director Adam Harris's My Saga documentary. Now, we'll be getting into that a little bit later. I'm going to have Adam Harris come on the show and chat a little bit about Solo, A Star Wars Story. We've also got Vanessa Marshall on for part two of her chat with us, and, of course, about her love of Star Wars and, of course, playing the role of Hera Syndulla in Star Wars Rebels. We've also got Jeremy Beckett on to chat a little bit about his thoughts on Star Wars and the actual fandom itself as well, and Solo, A Star Wars Story. But we've also got some book reviews with some recent releases out here in Australia. Again, some of these releases are a little bit older than the ones that are out there already. Again, Australia always seems to get, whether it's Star Wars books or any books in particular, magazines especially, months and months after the UK and US and in everywhere else you can find them. And one of the things is, I think we get to, whether it's a magazine that's released in March, we get in late May or early June. So a lot of the news has already been, if it's in that case, Star Wars gossip when it comes to rumors and spoilers, it's always months after the fact that it's on the internet. But when it comes to Star Wars books itself, well, that's a different kettle of fish. That is, we get them around about a month after releases elsewhere. Of course, you can find them in your local Targets, Kmart, Big W, Angus and Robertson, you name it, or even Zing Pop Culture stores all over Australia. But we're going to be talking about Solo, A Star Wars Story, the brand new art of book, which is just fantastic. We're going to be talking about the two new Dueling Kinsley books, the DK incredible cross-sections that you see in one part of the book, that is. Can't say it's an actual incredible cross-sections because it's not. It's actually the encyclopedia of Solo, A Star Wars Story. That's right. Yeah, of course, we've had both Ron and, of course, Warwick Davis himself chatting about the fact that they really like to take another property, which is part of the deal and the crossover from Lucasfilm to Disney. That is, of course, Willow. They'd like to see Willow continued. Now, I've seen rumors all over the place in regards to this. Some of it just being, you know, conjecture about talk that whether Warwick's had himself or Ron, or even this case, Val Kilmer, who's recovering with an illness right now. And I've got to say, I hope that, first of all, Val is able to get better as well. He's much better than he was. And I'd love to see him get, a role again in some way in a Willow sequel. Because playing Mad Mardigan, it really is the Han Solo of these films. I mean, he's a swashbuckling pirate-like character, and you just got to have him in there, alongside, of course, the amazing Warwick Davis. And if anyone has actually read the Chris Claremont sequels, which were, again, put together with George's input, of course, we're reading those right now out here in Australia. I'm reading part one as we speak, which is called Shadow Moon. So we'll be talking about some of this on the podcast because I think in some ways it relates to the hero's journey, like obviously George has been very influenced by with Joseph Campbell, his work, but also obviously that relating to Star Wars as well and the adventure that a hero goes through. Now, the actual book itself even has some ties into some famous lines said by Jedi Knights, and I'm not going to say it. You've just got to read the book yourself. If you can find it, it's a little bit hard to find out there these days, but it's the Bantam publication of the Shadow War, or the Shadow War Chronicles, as it's called. So go and check it out. But we're going to be talking about the books here very, very soon here on Fantha Tracks, the Fantha from Down Under. And here at Quinlan's Cantina, we're going to be talking about the brand new books that have just come out on the shelves here in Australia from Dorling Kinsley and much more. Here, let's look at some of the great new releases from Star Wars. All right there, Fantha Trackers. I hope all of you have had a chance to check out The Art of Solo, A Star Wars Story. See some of the concept work done in the film itself and just some of the ideas that are taken, whether it's from Ralph McQuarrie or just different other areas of the franchise and vice versa. One of the great things in this book is we get to see the Millennium Falcon expanded upon by different designers to give us that feeling of what Lando would have done with the Falcon itself. Where would he have taken the design and look and changed up? Obviously, we have this final design, which I think is fantastic, but there's some really good, interesting concepts of Corellian ship engineering in there. This is a wonderful book, and again, you feel a real journey reading through Phil's work. The way Phil puts through a lot of the descriptions and, of course, the history behind how these came about, I think is fantastic. Each one of them is great. You can just really grab yourself a hot coffee, sit down. And again, this is a coffee table book, so you can sit down and spend 2 hours just going through the amazing artwork. I've now gone through it 3 times, and I still feel like there's more to find in there. Go and check it out. It gets a 5 out of 5 on the Fantha scale. Also, we picked up recently the Absolutely Everything You Need to Know, Expanded Upon, New Edition. This is a fantastic book. Again, it's leveled at, I suppose, all areas of fandom, more towards the childhood through to teenage audience, but you can still get a lot out of this, especially if you're new to the franchise. This is a book that really shows not only the Clone Wars and different areas that have recently been added, but right up to the sequel trilogy and beyond. And some of the facts and, of course, trivia in there really eye-openers to people that are only knowing, I suppose, the film itself and the film series. So go and check that out. That gets a 4.5 out of 5 on the Fantha scale. Looking back at some of the great work we get from whether it's the DK line or any of the others, you've got to think about this is a great part of Star Wars fandom that we get. And, of course, the official guide to Solo, A Star Wars Story by Pablo Hidalgo is no slouch in that department. It's fantastic. I like the fact that we really get to see some of what was, in the, I suppose, in the behind the scenes area. And I don't mean behind the scenes of the film, but behind the main action of the film, particularly in Corellia, some stuff on the land speeders itself, the Millennium Falcon, and of course, one of my favorite new characters in the series, which is, of course, Emphis Nest and the culture around her, and obviously also the speeders, because this is really what it comes down to. I love the speeders and swoop bikes in Star Wars. And again, this is another addition to that legend. So top marks to Pablo and the team. It's fantastic. It's a great layout again. And particularly, I like the fact that they sort of got rid of the dust covers now, and they've got these more hardcover-based books too. It's a good size, slightly smaller than the older books too. It gets a 4 out of 5 on the Fantha scale.
Fantha.
Hey there, folks. How you going? This is Adam O'Brien, the Fantha from Down Under, and I've just come back from the release of My Saga's premiere Wednesday night. Huge turnout with Redback Garrison, courtesy of the 501st, and of course, friends and family of director Adam Harris and his son Jack, who stars in the film also. The film is fantastic, and I hope you all get a chance to go and see this film in your neck of the woods. But first up, let's have a chat to Adam Harris about Solo, A Star Wars Story. Welcome to FanthaTracks.com. Fantha from Down Under. This is Adam here, and Adam over here too. How you going, Adam?
Good, mate. Good. Good to be on Fantha.
That's it. Well, last week saw the release last Wednesday of the amazing My Saga.
Yes, look, no, it's going to be exciting and, you know, can't wait to share it with everybody. It's going to be awesome.
You can't half tell we're recording this before the premiere.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay, folks. You'll enjoy the movie.
Yeah, look, the film's going to be great.
It will. Now, folks, Adam is here to chat about another movie, and of course, Lucasfilm's new Ron Howard directed epic, because it is epic, it's a pretty epic movie, that is called Solo.
Oh, look, it's fantastic. It's just a great wild ride, fun ride. I just thoroughly enjoyed this film, and you know what? I get itchy every day that I want to go and watch it more and more.
Oh, yeah. And I love the fact that Alden is Han.
Oh, look, he did such a great job, you know. He didn't try to impersonate Harrison Ford. He made the character his own. And, you know, there were some little nods there to Harrison's mannerisms and, you know, facial gestures and things like that. But overall, he did a great job making the character Han Solo his own.
I mean, anyone could have picked up that script and gone, you know, maybe they didn't call it a Star Wars one, said young space pirate. And he's going, ha ha, I can do this, ha ha.
Oh, look, I think so. But look, no, he owned the role, and, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed his performance in Solo.
And let's put the hats off to Lucasfilm for not doing what I thought they'd do, which is get a younger version of Sean Connery to go walk into the movie at the start and go, now listen here, Junior, we call it Solo for a reason. You don't need a parent.
I don't think Sean could have worked, mate. No. What about
Michael Caine? If he came in this movie, he'd be best beat a Canadian butler. If he was a Jedi Knight, he'd be pronouncing his entry into every. That's right, I'm here on Coruscant for Master Bruce to get the wings on the bat speeder.
Oh, it could have worked that way. Yes, it could have.
Well, you got to admit that Christian Bale almost became Obi-Wan Kenobi in Phantom Menace 2.
Oh, no,
would have been
crazy.
Scary because the other role, Qui-Gon Jinn, was possibly going to be Russell Crowe at one stage. So that's pretty scary.
Yeah, it's weird. When you think about what could have been, I'm sort of glad that it happened the way it did with Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor.
Definitely. And before we get right into the review, let's just talk about this amazing news that we've broken it here on Fantha Tracks, the big possibility that there is a Kenobi film already possibly in production. You know, I mean, it's amazing. The fact that this film may not be announced yet, Stephen Daldry as director is the rumour. And let's just say that a certain Scottish martial artist is hard at work, working out.
Yes, it's interesting. You know, there's been a lot of rumours though on projects. We've got Obi-Wan and we've got, you know, Boba Fett and, you know, with what happened at the end of Solo, there was that character. You know, so there's a lot of these possible, but I don't think we're going to know anything for a little bit. I think after what's, you know, financially happened with Solo, they've probably put the pause on at the moment and they're going to let Episode 9, their production starts in July. So, yeah, we'll see. But look, I'm excited. I'm one of these people that definitely want a Kenobi film. But you've got to remember that Kenobi and that certain other character had their ending in Rebels. So unless we're going to see that in live action, you know, maybe at the tail end of that Kenobi film, it'll be interesting how it all plays out.
At last, we'll reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last, we'll have revenge.
Look, it'll be cool if that character does make an appearance. So, but it would be cool.
I don't sense anything. I mean, you could do that to the cows come home, but we're not going to. We're going to get into, of course, the one, the only, Solo. Let's look at the first part of the film, Corellia. This is not how I pictured Corellia, but bloody hell, this works.
Look, it's the whole tone of the film and the palette of the film is very dark and edgy. And Corellia is that gritty, dirty, industrial area. You know, it's a shipyard planet, so you know, what, the way they pictured it was very nice. You know, the underground scenes with the dark blue, it was very interesting looking Star Wars film, but it really gets you going. You can see Han's connection with the planet, even though he wants to leave, at the same time he's connected to Krilla, it is home. But yeah, I loved the chase scene at the beginning, which is really cool. I love that. It had a very American Graffiti feel to it.
It did. What I loved about the design was that it's reminiscent of places like Kamino, in particular, because of its water. I mean, Corellia is a water world, you know, and we've got to make that part of it. That was always there. But what I love about it is that it's literally whatever skyscrapers it does have, the water's come right up on top of it. So we're only seeing these little vestiges of tiny little bits of building and overgrowth and stuff like that. So I would say a lot of what we're seeing is under the water. I mean, that's why it's very grungy, very dirty. And I love the fact that it's just these little speeder bridges are the things that are holding everything together. Now, let's hats off to the American Graffiti look of these V8s. I mean, it's literally, that's what it is. It's muscle cars.
Oh, yeah. Look, it was so cool, those, it, like I say, very American Graffiti sort of feel to it, though, with the chases, with Moloch chasing Han and Kira. It was just, had that cool feel of zipping and sliding, and I love how Han saw the gap and he said, you know, watch this, and once again, that made me think of Harrison Ford saying that line in Empire Strikes Back. So there are all these little nods to everything, but straight from the get-go, there's that connection with the dice, Han's dice in the beginning of the film, him putting them over the mirror as he's driving off. So these dice that were just seen for a second in A New Hope when Chewie banged his head have become such a prominent prop in the last few films, which is really cool.
Well, it's integral to what Solo is all about. It's runs of luck. I mean, you know, he's the antithesis of what Kenobi's all about, which is there's no such thing as luck, you know, in my experience. So if you look at it's, you know, it's central, and obviously that ties into when Ben Solo picks it up as, you know, Kylo, and, you know, it disintegrates in his hand because it's not real, it's not there, you know.
Yeah.
But what I loved about it too is Kira. Emilia Clarke is really, really, in some ways, and I take it back to the Legends novels, like particularly the first of those A.C. Crispin stories. It's very much Brea Tharan, pretty much.
Oh, yeah. Look, this is one of the beautiful things of this film is they've harkened back to a lot of things in the past.
Mm-hmm.
They've brought a lot of that old legend stuff back in. They've taken characters and from other stories from back in the 70s and 80s back in. It just had that feel. But Emilia Clarke did a great job. I think her performance was fantastic. And, you know, she was this tough warrior-like survival person that, you know, Tobias Beckett says at the end, it was never about you. She's a survivor. And that's the way she plays it the whole way through the film. You know, she's torn, but at the same time, she's protecting Han, and, you know, you can tell that she loves him and she wants to protect him. And yeah, but she did a fantastic job.
Oh, she did. She was great. And, of course, that brings us to Beckett. I mean, now this is a true gunslinger character, and who better to play him than Woody Harrelson?
Oh, look, his first scene, when we get that Imperial March happening as we cut to 3 years later, and, you know, Han's on Mimban, you know, as an Imperial soldier fighting the resistance on the planet. And Tobias Beckett's entrance, there he is like a gunslinger, swinging his blasters in his left and right hand, shooting back, you know, the bad guys left, right and center. It was so cool and wicked. It was a great introduction to the character. And once again, his character felt like it belonged in the Star Wars universe. It didn't, for me, feel out of place.
Definitely. What I loved about, too, is that, you know, he's not really playing any favorites whatsoever. He's out there for himself. This is almost the cowboy version of, well, I suppose it's very cowboy, but it's very much a mercenary in the line of what we've already had with Boba Fett. But we didn't see a lot of that. This is getting back to that. To me, it's Lee Van Cleef.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I didn't even think of that. But, yeah, I reckon that would be about right, yeah. It felt like that, yes. But, you know, like I say, his character was just so cool. He was sort of like what Han would become, in a sense, or what I guess Han wanted to become, but at the end we know Han's the good guy. He could never be that person, even though he wants to be.
Definitely. And, of course, we have Val, only in it for a short bit, but I love that we get mention of Bosque through her.
Yeah, well, we got mention of Bosque and the Zane sisters, the Zahn sisters. They are bounty hunters, once again, from the old Expanded Universe. You know, a lot of nods, like I say, to the old EU and to the current status, but that was cool, Bosque and Zane sisters. I'm like, oh, my goodness, this is, once again, all these little nods to cool things. And that's what this film is littered with Easter eggs and hallbacks to other characters. As you know, Aura Singh is mentioned, and she literally wasn't even mentioned by name in the films, only in the cartoon series in Clone Wars. So interesting that we get that little nod once again to another character that you know, fans have been begging to know a little bit more about in the film.
Exactly. And of course too, we get a great villain, Paul Bettany, with Dryden Voss. Now, the minute I heard Voss, of course, me being me, naming the cantina after the fella, you know, I thought, well, yeah, it'll be Quinlan. And then of course Paul Bettany turns up and goes, Adam, how are you going? And I'm like, hang on, that's not Quinlan, but I like the fact that there's, well, the name's there at least.
Yeah. Oh, look, I liked him, but he felt more like a thug than an actual person who's got a bit of a power. Like, we know who the true villain of the piece is, but, you know, to me, he was good, but he wasn't menacing. He was more a character who was afraid if things didn't go his way. He was, once again, a survivalist, and he acted that way out of necessity. If someone didn't get what he wanted, he killed them. So then he could go back to the real boss and say, well, mate, I didn't get it, but I've already slaughtered everyone who did us over, so we'll need to find someone else. So he was always covering himself. But yeah, look, his performance, once again, was really good. I loved him, but to me, he wasn't the supervillain. We know who the supervillain was, so It's interesting.
Definitely. One of the things I liked about it was the ship. The ship that he has is literally a casino spire. I mean, the design on this was both golden and baroque at the same time. It's amazing.
Well, the yacht. You know, we heard and read about space yachts, you could say, in the old EU. So it was interesting to see one in its glory, I guess, in this film. And this thing was just stunning. And, of course, we know that Beckett's office was littered with nods to old EU, and which was so, once again, so cool. Of course, there was the idol from Raiders of the Lost Ark in there. We also had the crystal skull from the old Han Solo novel from Brian Daley. There was a Sith holocron in there. We had original Mandalorian armor. There was so many things in that office that were nodding to things either in the old EU or, and you know, in books and expanded unit. It was just amazing. It was a head spin for me.
It was, and I loved his little blades, his little curved blades, which are, and of course he studied Terras Cassi.
I see, yeah, I know. And once again, when you hear that, my first thought was, oh, the video game. That is one of the worst, you know, they dub it one of the worst video games ever. And the thing is, too, this isn't the first time that Terras Cassi's been mentioned in the current Star Wars canon, because the Praetorian Guards trained in Achaeenee, which was in Knights of the Old Republic, and Terras Cassi as well. So Snoke's guards were trained in that same fight technique, which is a little interesting if you think about it. So, you know, there could be something going on there. But yeah, it was cool to hear it actually mentioned by name when she downed the pike in Kessel. And L3 is like, oh, whoa, you know, and it's like, what was that? And it's like, Terras Cassi. And I was just like, oh, my goodness, I've actually heard it in the flesh in a Star Wars movie. This is epic.
That's right. Now, of course, we've got to talk about the amazing gambler, scoundrel, smuggler, and, of course, the ultimate when it comes to smooth criminals. That's right. The man himself, Lando Calrissian, played by Childish Gambino himself, Donald Glover.
Well, wasn't he just Lando? He was Lando. Yeah. He was born to play Lando. You can't say anything, but he was Lando Calrissian. You know, down to a T. Once again, some of his dialogue referred back to some of the Lando Calrissian novels from back in the early 80s when he's talking about the Sharu, which is in one of the titles of the Lando Calrissian novels. Mm-hmm. You know, there are nods to everything once again in this film. But Donald Glover once again did an amazing job. He felt like Lando. He played Lando really well.
And of course, I love his droid too. Of course, this is a great L3. Addition. Oh, L3 is fantastic.
Look, Phoebe, I can't remember the rest of her name, but I know it's Phoebe something something. But it was great. It was that comedy relief, I guess, to alleviate the film a little bit, which was nice. Of course, a little talk with Kira in the cockpit about, you know, droid love and all that sort of stuff, I thought was really funny. But once again, this is how, you know, that Easter egg of tying things into either the original trilogy or sequel trilogy or prequel trilogy, when L3 is uploaded into the ship. And once again, when that happened, the first thing I remember was C-3PO talking in Empire Strikes Back going, you know, Captain Solo, I don't know where your ship learned to communicate. It has the most peculiar dialect. And then only a few days later, you know, you've got Lucasfilm or Star Wars, you know, on Twitter putting up that little thing and saying Millennium Falcon and putting the L3 in as lettering. So L3 is literally the Falcon. The Millennium Falcon is a character, and she's been living and breathing in the Falcon since then, which is so cool.
It really makes you look at the films in a different light when you hear it that it's a character. Speaking of the Millennium Falcon, obviously it's had a bit of a facelift back here. It looks different. But I have a theory about this, and I want to throw this at you. I've read different varying opinions on this online, but I'm kind of thinking this because they've already mentioned that this was already an old freighter before Lando came in possession of it. And
pimped it out.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I have a feeling that all the new sort of fancy paintwork on it, the fancy paneling, the escape pod, the little ship at the front, obviously, all the really nice stuff on the inside, it's all fake. Everything about Lando is a facade. It always has been. You know, you look at Bespin. Is Bespin really about mining? No, it's about gambling. Always, you know, like everything that he's done is a scheme. He's a schemer more than he is he's a scoundrel. So to me, I think that's a very light work that he's done on it. And when it's going through that Kessel Run, those things just rip off right away. So I always think the ship's paneling would be a lot stronger if he's putting new paneling on that.
So. Well, you think so? Well, that's very true. I didn't even think of it that way. But, yeah, look, Lando, you see that through the film, that this guy is an honest crook, that he'd do anything to swindle anyone out of anything. So that wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, he's pimped it out. It's beautiful. It's clean, you know. And we got that conversation between Han and Lando about the ship and, you know, Han having that moment that his father was one of the people who built those Corellian freighters. So, you know, Han's very familiar with those ships from previous experience with his own father. So, but yeah, look, with Lando, yeah, he's a very, it's all a show. He's playing a part, I guess, in society, and he does what he can to get by, and he's good at what he does. But yeah, he definitely is a schemer, that's for sure.
Definitely. Now, one character that comes through the early part of the film and becomes a bigger part towards the end, and we don't know too much about until the ending, is Enfys Nest. And I think this is a great looking character to begin with. The design of the outfit's fantastic. The speeder especially, I love that speeder, and I'll definitely the deluxe model of that from Hasbro when I can. This just looks fantastic. But I love the fact that, you know, I think I'm not going to give it away, but the ending and the resolution of where we find the journey this character takes, and, you know, I think my take on it is that the character is a bit like Boba Fett. It could be the character is obviously not a mercenary, but it's the character's about the armor. I mean, it could be anybody in that armor, you know. And I will say this, maybe Enfys Nest has been around for a while, and it's a bit like the Phantom. And the Phantom was, you know, a character that seemed immortal. But it was about the father getting down to the son, and the son then carrying on to their son. And it could end up being the fact that that was the character's parents originally had that outfit and was working, you know, for the freedom of their people and all that sort of thing. And then that's handed down to the next generation.
Well, that's sort of hint to that in the film, because Empress makes a comment saying, well, my mother may have lived if she continued to wear a mask. So it sort of hints to that in the film, that this is a generational thing. I felt when there was the reveal and we got to see the band of characters with their helmets off, and we know that there's a character from Rogue One there, I automatically thought of Saw Gerrera tied to this group, because this would be something Saw Gerrera would do. You know, so I felt very, you know, there's a connection there some way, and we know that there is a very small connection between Rogue One and also The Phantom Menace with Warwick Davis's character in that group as well, because he's playing the character that was in one of Jabba's boxes in The Phantom Menace. So that was sort of cool to see that sort of connection. But I have to admit, when Empress first comes on the scene in that train robbery scene, when they're trying to get the coaxium and that tribal music's kicking in, I have to say the score was fantastic for this film. That tribal beat comes in, and when Empress jumps onto the train and dodges laser bolts and then uses her staff to block them as well, it was just magic. I thought straight away this could be a Jedi, because the reflexes to dodge laser bullets is unheard of by a normal person.
That's right. That's true. I mean, they're sort of, I suppose, the weaponry too, the choice of the vibro staff or whatever that is.
Yeah.
There's definitely that there, you know. But it sort of drew me back to the character Chirrut Imwe, and the fact that, you know, this could be, again, somebody just extremely well-trained and has agility.
It was possible they could be a descendant from one of the Guardians of the Wills. You just don't know. See, this is the thing. There's so many what-ifs. I did feel the shot when there was the reveal of the helmet coming off. There was a very prolonged sort of shot on that, and I thought, are we meant to know this person, or is someone going to say something and go, oh my goodness, you're actually this person? But there was none of that. So I sort of was weirded out by that shot choice. It sort of felt really out of place, because the hold on that person was quite long, and everyone's expression was, oh my God, and you're like going, okay, who is it? And it's like, oh, I need to get a drink. And it's like, oh, okay, so we've held on to that shot of that person for so long, and we're not going to say who that really is. And that's how it sort of felt, a bit out of place. I was thinking Tobias was going to say it was his daughter with Val, and they'd abandoned her. That's what I was, that was my automatic assumption. And then after that, I thought, well, maybe it could be Saw Gerrera's daughter or something, maybe.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, it sets itself up that way, and then I think that's what comes down to the fact that the armor is the character, and all of them have a chance of fighting for, you know, it could be anyone in that armor. You know, I think that's the moral there, is that they've got a face there about rebellion and rebelling against what's happening to, you know, the people and stuff like that of their planet. Now, the film itself, I think, is probably the most fun I've had in Disney's run of Lucasfilm films, in this case, Star Wars. How do you rate this in terms of the others? Is this enjoyable? Do you think it's right up there with the others?
Look, I'm going to say something very bold here. I think Solo is the best film that Disney have put out of all four. And I'll give you my reasoning, okay? So because Rogue One has been my favourite out of the three. I mean, the standalones, with all the trouble the standalones have had in both films, with directors, with writers, with everything, I think they've really stood above head and shoulders of the Skywalker saga films. Now, The Force Awakens was a nostalgia ride. We got a very familiar story. Loved it, enjoyed it. I loved everything about it. We had Rogue One, which was a very emotional driven film. And when I saw Rogue One, after a while, I thought, actually, out of the two, I thought Rogue One is my favorite, because it doesn't have that happy ending. It's probably got the saddest ending out of every Star Wars film ever made, to be quite honest, above Empire and above Revenge of the Sith. And then Last Jedi came out, and of course, I felt a bit mixed about it. I still do. I think it's a great film. But, you know, when you've got a character like Luke Skywalker not dying, but saw the dying. I didn't have the emotional impact I had with like Han Solo when he passed in The Force Awakens, or even the emotional weight of the characters Rogue One passing. But with Solo, like I say, this wasn't a film about great character development or anything like that. It was just a fun adventure. It was like, oh, I'm going on a journey with Han and this cool adventure, and it was just so much fun. And I think Solo is the best film that they've put out so far. Rogue One's probably just underneath it for me, but who knows, like, it could change at any moment. But I think the Skywalker saga films are just hovering, and I think if 9 is going to be the end of it, JJ needs to pull some magic out of his butt to make this stand head and shoulders above, because currently at the moment, these Skywalker films don't really connect with the other 6. It's just, oh, well, Han's dead and Luke's gone with the Force, and we know that Carrie Fisher isn't going to be around. So is it just the last 3 is just knocking off the Skywalkers and killing them all out, and Rey's going to be this new... It has nothing to do with the other 6. And, you know, Lucas has always said that the Skywalker saga was always about the rise and fall and redemption of Anakin Skywalker. These films don't really have anything to do with Anakin Skywalker. So unless Anakin is brought back in 9, or there's something wrong, the prophecy was wrong, and it was another descendant of Skywalker that was meant to be the chosen one, and Rey is actually a Skywalker, and it's all going to be flipped on its head, and everyone will be happy, or go, I told you so. 9's going to have to do something special for me to really stand head and shoulders above Solo and Rogue One, to be honest.
Let's speculate for a second here. Now, somebody came to the last Star Wars celebration that was not expected. That was, of course, yes. Hayden Christensen. Hayden. Mm-hmm. That's right. And there's rumours for him hanging around the Last Jedi set a number of times, where they were talking about he'd been doing this and that. And I think a lot of that was mixed up with the constant rumours of Darth Vader turning up in that film. It ended up being, obviously, that didn't happen at all. He was in Rogue One. Fair enough. But I will say this. There's been a number of times and hints, whether it's in the art of The Force Awakens, where we can see the artists working on their concepts. And, you know, some of the idea was, you know, JJ had possibly talked about, you know, what is it about Darth Vader that Kylo Ren is so, you know, enamored with? What is it? And also the fact that, you know, there is a Force ghost, obviously, we know now of Anakin Skywalker, but what if, because he is that balance, he is the chosen one, that he would waver between both dark and light? And I think, well, Snoke's gone now, see, and he's definitely gone. You can see that in Last Jedi. But we can remember that Kylo had an affinity for talking to the mask. What if it's got to that point where he is now obviously Supreme Leader Ren? We need to start seeing the fact that we then have, you know, the likes of maybe Anakin come back and say, mate, what are you doing?
Look, I think it's going to happen. I think that this is the big key to joining all the movies together. You need Hayden Christensen to come back in 9 to tie it all together. Because if you don't have Anakin as a big, well, not a big part, but a very pivotal part of 9, then the film is got these. This sequel trilogy will be looked back on and go, okay, we ragged on the prequels, but hang on, the prequels and 4, 5, and 6 all work together as one giant story. But these 3, and they've ended the Skywalker saga, have nothing to do but besides killing off the Skywalkers. There's got to be something that needs to tie all 9 of these films together. It can't just be, oh, we're continuing the Skywalker saga, because, yes, Ben Solo is technically a Skywalker, he's a Skywalker descendant, but he's killed his dad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his uncle's gone, and that literally leaves his mother, and we know that that's probably going to be either she's going to be written out or recast. It can't be just about, you know, and Rey, if Rey destroys Kylo and going, oh, okay, so all the Skywalker's gone. And that was the whole point. To bring balance, they all had to do these certain things to bring balance. It would just feel like a cop-out. So that's what I mean. Like, we know we're going to get a time jump in 9. it had to happen. Hopefully it's quite a large time jump, probably 5 years or more. We need that giant time jump. We need to, the war's getting to the point where it's going to be make or break for one side. The resistance has grown to a size. There might be a few more Jedi on the cards, and they, you know, we get to see the Knights of Ren. But Anakin Skywalker has to be in this film. If they don't, they've missed the biggest opportunity to tie in all the films. And, you know, they were always talking, oh, we're going to tie everything together, and it's, well, you haven't. The only thing in The Last Jedi that tied the prequels to it was the mention of Darth Sidious, which was huge because he's never been mentioned in the original trilogy or The Force Awakens, and you hear his Luke Skywalker saying Darth Sidious, and you go, oh, wow, so now that makes the prequels justified in its thing. But you've got to have Anakin in this film, and Anakin has to play a big part. And if you ever read the original Return of the Jedi scripts, Obi-Wan and Yoda come back to life. They're resurrected. So, once again, there's this opportunity that Anakin could get resurrected, or Luke could get resurrected in the next film. And we need to see that, because that's the next step in the Force. We need something. We've had Force projection, and it's not the first time Force projection's ever been used in any, you know, in the old EU it was. But it's not a new power. So we just finally got to see it on screen. But got to see Anakin Skywalker. And like I say, if they're starting filming now or in the next 4 weeks, I hope Hayden Christensen is on the cards. He is doing a soccer game in Manchester, by the way, in a couple of weeks. So it's interesting that he's in London around the time when episode 9 is about to start filming.
So nice.
Maybe that's a sign.
Now, can I say this to the folks out there going, there's no way Luke Skywalker is coming back to life. Well, you might want to look at the scenes on Ukto when Yoda turns up. First of all, he is able to manipulate nature in the form of lightning around him. Then he's able to go up to Luke and says, "Ah, young Skywalker, never your mind on where you are."
Yeah, and he hits him.
He hits him. Actually makes contact. Now, we haven't seen a ghost do that before.
Nope. We have not.
That's right. And if you watch carefully to Yoda's figure, after he does that, the blue murk goes away. Mm. Interesting.
So, and see, this is the thing too. Yoda also makes the thing that we can't lose Rey. Mm. And it's like, okay, so obviously you know why she needs to... why we need her, why she's so important to the journey. You know, and I've had a wild theory, and I don't think it's true, but I'm going to put it out there. Okay, so we saw Kira with her Teras Kasi, great warrior, very strong sort of thing. And we've got Han Solo. And, you know, the rumor has, you know, people said, oh, Han and Kira's daughter is Rey. And everyone's like, no, that can't be. But how ironic would it be, and this is, you know, because we had The Last Jedi, that anyone can have the Force, that Han was actually Force-sensitive, but he just never knew it. And that he had a child with Kira, and Kira being the strong warrior type that she was. And let's say, because there is a 12-year age gap between Kylo and Rey. She's 18 and he's 30. What's to say that Han and Leia didn't bust up? He found Kira, they had a kid, and unfortunately, because of everything going on, and then he's realised that she's Force sensitive, they've ditched her on Jakku, and they've done a runner going, I have to protect her, how am I going to protect her? And he made a deal to get off, you know. I just think it's weird. I just think, you know, there's got to be something there that she's tied somehow to the Solo or the Skywalker family. She just can't be a nobody.
Well, you realise Ryan never said she was a nobody. He even said in the documentary, the director and the Jedi, he was talking about the fact that he just didn't want to give her the easy answers.
Yeah, he didn't want to. But it'll be interesting. Like, that's a theory I had a few days ago, and I thought, oh, you know, it's... Nah, that can't be, you know, there's no way, and, you know, it has to be Luke, and, you know, or she is just a nobody, and... Then once again, that's a bit of a slap in the face to people. Because once again, why would the Skywalker saga end with the person who isn't connected to the Skywalker being the hero? when it's Tahalfings to do with the Chosen One and the Skywalkers. And once again, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, like I say, I love these films, don't get me wrong. I love them and they're great. But my big thing is how do The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi connect to the last six films? And not purely because that's a stormtrooper and that's, you know, Luke Skywalker, isn't it? How does it connect to the story that is told through those first six films?
And I hope that the time jump is actually 10 years, because if it's 10 years, it would match up with the time jump between Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones.
Which would be huge. Which would make Kylo about 40 and make Rey 28. I don't know how old Adam Driver is, but if he's pushing near 40, then that'd be fine. But you can put a couple of grey streaks in his hair and it'd be fine. But like I say, this last film has to tie the prequels, the originals, and the sequels all into one. It's got to do something magic to go, oh, hang on, we had that, those first two films. Didn't really feel like it, but hang on, now I can see the giant thread that was made. Now I understand why The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi are the way they were. Why we needed two films to tell a one complete story, and this last film tied everything together. Now I understand. I didn't know this before. Wow, that was magic and amazing, wonderful. Now I understand it. And then you can watch all nine films and go, wow, that's one epic story about the Skywalker saga.
Definitely. I agree. I think at the end of the day, we've got to remember this is like a piece of music. And music and poetry, both those things tend to rhyme. So let's see some rhyming happening. I think, you know, at the end of the day, George was a good composer in some ways. I think that people didn't realise. And we need to see that continue. I have to agree. I don't think it's been rhyming as much in the last two. There's little callbacks, obviously, to Death Stars and things like that. But we need to see a progression back into a bit more rhyming. And God knows, the fandom needs it too. So at the end of the day, I'm looking forward to episode 9. And I know JJ has produced some great third-part Star Trek Beyond being one of those. He may not have directed it, but he definitely produced a great film.
Oh, look, with JJ on board, I'm very confident that we're going to get a very fun-filled film. It's going to be quite solid. I just want it to be able to connect to the other films, like all of them, in a very big way. And JJ, if you ever listen to this, mate, get Hayden Christensen in, whether people like him or not. Mate, get him in there, and I know he'll do you justice. Get him back in front of that screen as Anakin Skywalker, and I tell you what, fans will be crying, and everyone will be loved, and it'll be the biggest film of all time.
That's right. So, folks, go and do that, and obviously, check out my saga as well. Where can folks check it out?
They can check us out on Facebook. We're on facebook.com/MySagaDocumentary. We also have the My Saga podcast, which is on iTunes. And we have My Saga Twitter, which is @MySaga_SW.
Next up is part two of our chat with Vanessa Marshall, Harrison Dula of Star Wars Rebels.
Got Sam Witwer there too, who's now hosting, well, working with Freddie with Geg Wars, which I just saw on YouTube the other day. You guys playing Age of Rebellion.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I gotta tell you, man, I just love it. I played D&D a long, long time ago, actually with the guy who does the voice of Winnie the Pooh, of all things.
Oh, wow.
Or not, is it Piglet? I think he plays Piglet? I don't know. Anyway, I'll have to look it up, but we used to do sketch comedy together, I went over to his place and I played D&D, and yeah, it was fun, you know, all good, but nothing like this. This was absolutely like bananas, because of course it's Star Wars. Yeah, he voiced Winnie the Pooh. His name is Travis Oates. God bless him. That was my first D&D. And now this is, I guess, a role-playing Star Wars game with my mates, my buddies from Star Wars. It doesn't get any better than that, you know. I was a little apprehensive at first. I thought, oh, my, is this, like, out of my league? Nope. Love it. Highly recommend it. We have a great time. I think we have another episode coming up soon, too. So I look forward to it. Sam Witwer is great as a DM. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's great at everything he does. That guy, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And that voice, I mean, we're not going to, no solo spoilers here, ladies and gentlemen, but let's just say the work speaks for itself when it comes to what Sam does. I mean, all through Rebels, and even going back to Clone Wars, obviously he's had a bit of a staple of these great characters, which you don't know where they're going to swing left or right when it comes to the light or dark side. And he does it with such subtlety sometimes that you just don't know.
Yeah. Absolutely. Every word is perfect.
And laid out some of these scripts, which obviously Filoni is really adept at, figuring out how much do we let the audience see first and then, really build up that crescendo before we go to the climax. And for us as fans, I mean, I'm sure you guys see it yourselves when you finally see the episodes too, that, it's revealed in just the right times, these nice reveals that we get.
Yeah, for sure. I could watch and listen to Sam work any day, all day long. he's just amazing.
It is. Now, obviously, you've seen Solo. We've got to get your thoughts on it. Obviously, we're not going to give away spoilers here, ladies and gents, but what are your thoughts? This film's fantastic.
Oh, man, I loved it. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. I finally got to see it last night, and I need to see it 1,000 more times, of course. that's my goal. That's my plan. But I gotta say, man, I really, really loved it, and I'm so grateful that I was able to do the background characters for it with an ADR group. It was just an honor. And for that one, I actually went in and I was able to, participate with the group. And I'll tell you, man, that was awesome.
So when you're doing some of this ADR work, obviously sometimes it's by yourself, but it sounds like it's a lot more fun when you've got the cast of characters around you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had so much fun. Just sort of interacting off each other. I mean, the different scenes where they are, I don't want to ruin anything. You'll have to go and see it, but there are various aliens running about and children running about and, I don't want to ruin anything. But just there in the big groups, you can hear sort of aliens and children and, we're all mixed up in there. So, what a great time, man. That was so much fun.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I was surprised by the cast. Like, when I heard Woody Harrelson was going to be in a Star Wars movie, I went, huh?
Exactly.
Beckett's such a great character. And, you'll have to see it for yourselves if you haven't seen it. But Beckett's the kind of character that fits just right into that time period of Star Wars.
Yeah, for sure.
Without a doubt. And I just think that the audiences that we've seen out here in Australia are going in going, well, Han Solo, a young Han Solo, how's this going to work? Is it going to be like an Indiana Jones, like the young indie Sean Patrick Flannery sort of mold, where it's, trying to cast its own character in some ways, without being the Harrison Ford. And Alden's done that, and he's done it in such a way that he is Han Solo, but he's his own Han Solo, and it worked for me very well.
Right, exactly. Yeah, there were certain looks that he gave that it was just scary to me how much he looked exactly like Harrison Ford. It was really, it was just magical. I was so happy.
And Donald, I mean, some of those scenes with Lando are just so well done. And you kind of think, I look at what Billy did in Empire in particular, and some of those lines now mean differently. What have you done to my ship?
Exactly. God, yeah, I know. Glover is just a genius. I love all of his work, his music, and he was just so great as Lando. everyone was just flawless. I was so thrilled.
It's just
I can't wait for everybody to get out there and see it.
That's right. I mean, look, I must have seen The Last Jedi a number of times at the cinema, but this one's going to be at least more than 10 times, you know. But
yeah, right?
You know what I want to do? I want to come to the United States, up to the Man's Theatre, and I want to line up with everyone else. So hello, Rick Peralta, if you're listening.
Yes, please do. That would be amazing. I would love it.
Yeah, I've got to do it. Like I've seen it every year. Everyone, you know, when there's a release, everyone lining up. And it just, to me, that's what fandom's about, you know, like getting out there and actually being amongst it.
What's our next? Are we looking at 9? Is that, what's our next time of together?
I'm pretty sure it's December 2019. So it'll be Christmas time. Yeah.
Oh, no. We have to wait that long?
Yeah. Unfortunately.
That's awful.
I know. I kind of like the May dates. The May dates are pretty cool. You know, like it's mid-year, you know, and it's summertime too for you guys. So it's perfectly to see it over in the States that time. Whereas we're all freezing over here with our big parkas on and beanies, especially when you're bald.
You know, who knows? You never know. I mean, Christmas might also be fun because it's, you know, it's a good time out here. The industry kind of slows down, so people have more time to hang out and, you know. Well, we'll have to make that happen for 2019.
Oh, I have to. Oh, I can't wait to actually get out there. Again, we're talking about a cinema that has, you know, a huge history to it. And for us out here in Australia, we always looked at that as that's the place where you show off a movie for a premiere. You don't do it out in the middle of the country. You do it there. You do it there because it's got that's where Star Wars started.
Yeah. There's nothing like Man's Chinese. There's just nothing like it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's a must experience.
Oh, yeah. Well, mutual friends of ours from Skywalking Through Neverland, Richard and Sarah, have always said, if I come out there, I've got to see that. But then Richard's going to take me on the Planet of the Apes tour and show me all the different locations of where Planet of the Apes was shot.
That's awesome.
So big shout out to Richard and Sarah over there. And I'll definitely make it happen.
Because I was doing the Orlando Comic Con, I wasn't in town, sadly. I was able to send them pizza so I could support them.
Oh, that's lovely.
Standing in line out there at the movie theater, but I wasn't able to be there in person, sadly. So 2019, we're all going to have to be there.
Oh, we have to. We've got to bring a few Aussie buskers with us as well. This is what we do that's a little bit different. We do the old pub rock on the side of the street.
I like it. That's awesome.
Oh, we got to do it. Now, folks, you can also check out the work Vanessa's doing in the Marvel Universe as well. And it's sci-fi too. Guardians of the Galaxy. Mate, how did this come about?
Guardians of the Galaxy, that audition came, it wasn't disguised as anything. And, you know, I know Gamora's the most dangerous woman in the galaxy. And the movie hadn't even come out yet when we auditioned for it. And again, it's sort of like you get so many pieces of copy that you just sort of do the best you can and let it go and forget about it, really. But when that one came around, I could not believe it. That was insanity. I'm a huge Marvel fan, so to be a part of it was amazing. And then we all went to see the movie together, and then following that, they announced the cartoon. So we had to keep quiet about it for quite a long time. And that was a hoot. I really love that cast, with Kevin Michael Richardson as Groot and David Sobolov as Drax. Trevor Duvall is incredibly talented as Rocket. And Will Friedle is an absolute genius as Star-Lord. And the cool thing, we laughed so much. It's not often that you get a group together that sort of fits so well. I mean, even Marvel said that the energy that we have as a cast is just something you just can't predict, you know. It was just such a happy accident. Yeah, we all got along so well. And, you know, part of that is making fun of each other and punching each other. You know, it's not like lovey-dovey times. Like, we just sit there and say horrible things about each other. I mean, you know, but just for the sake of a joke. And then we would get right back to work and get right down to it. And it was a great experience. I love those guys.
You know, it's one thing I find that a lot of the successful series, particularly the people that I've interviewed over the last couple of years and the various podcasts I've had, it's been when groups come together and get to know each other really well. Obviously, that cast, obviously Rebels. And even going back to one that influenced Dave Filoni a lot, which was the Robotech cast from back in the 1980s, they're all the same. They all got to know each other and they're still friends to this day. So it sort of stands the test of time. Being, you know, good pals with your workmates and stuff like that really helps, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm very, very grateful that that one came about as well. Another green being in space.
Well, but you've...
green is the new black.
But you've also done Green Lantern as well. People have probably...
That's right. Yeah, was it Herzog's lady friend, I believe. Yeah, also that, played by Kevin Michael Richardson. That was a good time.
Nice, yeah. Nice.
Very rare. No one ever notices that. So thanks for noticing. I think I played She-Hulk in Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes and Poison Ivy a few times in different Lego things and Batman Brave and the Bold. So I definitely have had my share of green characters.
Brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. And folks, you can actually get to see Vanessa herself in Australia very soon. She's going to be in Melbourne. So she gets to actually witness our amazing country out here, and particularly the city with four seasons in one day, Melbourne. So are you looking forward to it?
Very excited. I've never been to Australia. I'm so excited. And I hope to come back for Supernova. There's one, I think, in November that I'm trying to do in Brisbane, I think.
You'll get to see me then.
Is that correct? Yes, I'm working on it. I don't know if it's actually going to be able to happen this year. But anyway, I'll be over again. So if folks don't catch me in Melbourne the weekend of June 9th, I believe it is. Hopefully I'll be back in November and on and on. I really would love to do that. I may go to Armageddon over in New Zealand. I love to travel, so I'm all over it. I can't wait.
It's awesome.
That should be lots of fun. Yeah, David Sobolov, who plays Drax, will be in Melbourne with me. So,
oh, wow.
We'll be yucking it up. David Sobolov is amazing. He also plays Grodd in The Flash, the television show. So, he's got all kinds of cool things going on.
Oh, yes. He's very talented. I love the guy. What I love, too, is the fact that folks, you've got to get out to these conventions and meet these wonderfully talented people, but also get out there and throw the Star Wars fandom out there. Enjoy it, especially in Melbourne. It's going to be cold, so you got to keep warm, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, hopefully it won't be too cold.
Nah,
it's been sort of chilly here that we haven't quite managed to click over into the summer weather yet. Yeah, it's still sort of spring into summer, I guess. A bit rainy, nice. and kind of cloudy.
Well, yeah. When you get that overcast weather, we always get it out here, but it always clears by lunchtime. No matter where it is, it's around about 35 degrees Celsius, about probably whatever it is, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, whatever it is.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, so warm weather. Be ready for it.
I can't wait. That'll be great. That's I'm happy either way.
So where can fans catch you, whether it's on the web or vice versa, to
Sure. Well, come find me on Twitter, @VanMarshall. Come say hello. On Instagram, I am @VanessaMarshall1138, an ode to Mr. Lucas. Coming up, the season 3 of Young Justice can be found on DC's streaming service, which will be launching, I believe, in the fall. Most recently, I was the live announcer for the Cord and Tish covering the royal wedding. I don't know if you caught any of that on HBO. I'm not sure if you get that down under, but...
We do. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, that was lots of fun. But there are a couple video games that they haven't announced yet and a couple other cartoon series that I signed NDAs for. But if you sort of stay in touch on Twitter and Instagram. I'm also on Facebook. I'll make the announcements as I'm allowed to, but there's all kinds of fun stuff coming up. So I'm very, very excited.
That's right.
And I look forward to meeting people in Melbourne. Come say hello.
Oh, without a doubt. And if you want to see Vanessa, whether it's in Brisbane in November, or if that doesn't happen, there's always the Gold Coast right here, the Gold Coast itself, Supernova next year in April. Let's get the word out to Supernova. Let's say, hey, look, we the fans want to see it happen.
Hey, yeah, campaign. I would love to, man. That would be great.
There you go. So, you know, from Australia, get our mind. Here you go. Let's get it happening.
Yeah. That's awesome.
On behalf of not just Star Wars fans, but Fanthatrax as well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. And, folks, we'd love to have Vanessa on again in the future for sure.
Absolutely. Maybe when they release the Blu-ray for season 4, I'll come on back. We can discuss all the extras in there. They're supposed to be really great.
Sounds good to me. We'll go straight through those extras for sure, mate. It'll be fantastic.
For part 2 of his chat from Brisbane, Australia, is Jeremy Beckett, here to chat about a little bit of Star Wars, Solo, a little bit of Millennium Falcon, who knows, all here in Quillen's Cantina.
I just think Jimmy Smits will play into a Kenobi film big time.
I'm just trying to picture how old he looked.
Well,
because Jimmy Smits now, to me, was his tattooed character in Sons of Anarchy.
True. I mean, I remember him being in Rogue One, but I mean, this will be before that, if they do it, because they'd have to.
Yeah, but he was cloaked and shadowed in Rogue One, wasn't he?
Yeah, so yes. He didn't really get a good shot of him.
His agedness.
So he'd be, he'd be one that have to be a fair age by then. I mean, he's, mid-60s now, probably, thereabouts.
You probably want him in his late 40s, early 50s.
Yeah, so they may even have to look at maybe possibly recasting, But he doesn't look that old, really, does he?
They can do wonders with makeup, you know? Bit of whiteout and some polyfill spackle. That'll do it.
You're right, actually. You know, you look at some of the stuff they've done lately with, I think it was a Marvel film. I'm not huge on the Marvel films.
We don't need to talk about CGI characters, though.
No, but... But when they have used makeup to sort of, even just creature effect stuff that they've done to age down the characters a little bit and make it younger, it's really worked. I mean, it's amazing what that sort of
worked. Ryan Reynolds at the end of Deadpool 2 in the credits scenes.
Yeah.
When they put him, youthified him 4 or 5 years.
That's right,
They could do the Green Lantern script scene.
Yeah, if only that was real.
That got the single biggest laugh of that whole movie.
Oh, it did. You know, and it's funny because I do have a mate of mine who's huge. I don't mind the old Green Lantern stuff myself because there's parts of that really eat into Jedi lore because of both of them coming back from the old Docky Smith novels. I mean, it's all a rip off of Lensman at the end of the day. So
I'll have to take your word. I never read any DC or Marvel.
Well, the idea is that it's a focal point where they draw some type of power from. So, and obviously, Green Lantern, you've got your Lantern, Lensman, they've got lenses, these little discs, basically. And in Star Wars, George said, well, that's a great idea, but I'll just make it a thing that's around them. You know, it's just the same sort of principle.
Rather than an object.
Yeah, rather than an object. And
I'm going to make it single cell organisms that live in everybody's blood.
Perfect.
Because that answers everybody's questions, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. It does. Oh, my. You know, that, now that's a can of worms that gets opened and never gets closed.
At every convention. Oh, don't say midichlorians at a celebration.
I remember a really bad dad joke back then when that came out. It was somebody who was watching who had no idea what midichlorians were. Did he just say chlorine? why don't they go Midi salt water? You know, I'm like, what the hell is this going on about? I said, chlorine. But I've always thought that, you know, one of the big things about this universe is that George pulled from so many different sources, and that's why you've got such an array of different stuff.
His upbringing, you know, in the 50s, there was a lot of influences going on. It was a lot of changes in American society and the economy and what women were allowed to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's, in some ways, it's a little bit like, you know, I suppose Star Trek's covered similar areas when it has too, but to me, Star Wars has done it in a much more rock and roll fashion, you know. This stuff rocks at a much faster pace, and, you know, you either get with it or you don't when you're watching it, as far as the information that's coming at you. I mean, Star Wars is still a very fast film when you watch it, when you think about it.
That's a very good analogy. If Star Trek is a space opera, then Star Wars is a space rock concert.
It really is. You know, like the characters are that little bit more on the edge, and that's what I love about that part. I mean, think about it. We've got these two massive franchises, one who to some degree has been also influenced by Frank Herbert's Dune, and now we have Blade Runner 2049's director about to launch two Dune films in the next year and a half, which will be very interesting to see how they compete. It's a different type of film, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't know, if we're going to go with the concert analogy, the music analogy, what is Dune?
Yeah, well, Dune's more like an old opera. I mean, like, literally an old opera.
I think it's like a Chinese opera.
Well, yeah, when you think about it.
Yeah, it definitely is a, you know, particular flavour. You have to have a taste for Dune to get really into it.
You do. Now, you're going to love this. Talking to Vanessa Marshall earlier today, which you can catch on this episode too, ladies and gents, is that she worked on the old Dune 2000 and Emperor Battle for Dune.
You're going to have to enlighten me. Was that the TV series or was that a game?
Just games, these were. These are games that came out. They were kind of like Command and Conquer, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I remember the game. Yep. I remember Command and Conquer more, but I remember the Dune game.
But when that came out, I remember that they had a lot of cutscenes too. I think she was just doing voices of computers and stuff like that in the game itself. But when you watch the cutscenes, they've got a pretty amazing array of actors. One of them just happens to be Gimli from Lord of the Rings.
Now that does ring a bell, yeah.
And, of course, Sulla from Indiana Jones.
From Raiders, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So
that I'm pretty certain I did get far enough into the game to catch that.
And he did it quite a bit then, because, I mean, Mark Hamill was doing the Wing Commanders with Malcolm McDowell and him as well. And if I remember, it was even Biff from Back to the Future was in that too. In Wing Commander.
Wing Commander, yeah.
Yeah.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the episode for this week here from Quinlan's Canteen on the Gold Coast of Australia, the Fanta from Down Under. Big thanks to Vanessa Marshall, Jeremy Beckett, and Adam Harris for being on the show today. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with more Star Wars news, reviews, and rumours. For the meantime, go and check out www.fanthatracks.com for all your Star Wars news in one single file from the entire team at Fanthatracks, covering all spectrums of Star Wars. You can also catch the rest of the shows, that is Making Tracks, our flagship show, with Dave Tree and, of course, Mark Newbold from any podcatcher. Most likely going to catch it also at iTunes and SoundCloud. So go over there, subscribe, and enjoy the shows. If you enjoy the shows, leave a review. Tell us what you'd like to see on the show. If you'd like us to review a certain movie or book or whatever it is, let us know. We'll try and get that happening. And from Quinlan's Canteen on the Gold Coast of Australia, I want to say a big thanks to all of you for listening tonight. And we'll catch you in a couple of weeks' time with episode 5 of The Fanta from Down Under. May the Force be with you.